forth from this time and place that fighting is good. That's what we learned.
Love it.
That's what we learned yesterday.
Pumped up.
The only thing that matters now is fighting all over the place. Fighting down the...
I like it.
Something. I never watched South Park.
Love, take me down to the streets.
It's a gorgeous Thursday morning in the Mile High City, and I don't know what it's like in Los Angeles, but welcome in.
Windy as hell.
It's this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, the post-fight edition. My name is Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
We are ready to be as insightful and as measured and as mature as you would imagine somebody discussing a fight between grown men to be.
Yeah.
Unless you're that dude who works for NBC San Diego.
San Diego, they didn't really comport themselves very well in any sense yesterday.
It was... It was interesting. We're going to get into it here in a second. But hi, everybody. Welcome in. It's episode number 128 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. And we are we are one day, not even one full day, post-fight. Yesterday, if you were tuned into the Colorado Rockies in their season finale with the San Diego Padres, the Rockies' star third baseman is a young man known as Nolan Arenado. Or if you're Chip Carey, Nolan Arenado still in 2018. Chip Carey still can't figure out how to say that correctly in back-to-back instances of saying
reason, I thought you said Chip Kelly, and I was like, why does UCLA football coach
Chip Kelly.
Like,
you're Chip Kelly. But the Rockies star young third baseman, Nolan Arenado, took exception to a pitch behind his back from starting pitcher Luis Perdomo of the San Diego Padres. That means fathers in Spanish. San Diego fathers. And Nolan decided, I'm going to comport myself with a little bit of aggression and perhaps some fightiness, I think is the word. I think that's the translation generally of
fightiness. Of we tried the Bing translate yesterday.
Yeah, we did. Nolan sandblasted furious. Nolan decided, probably done with words. I might as well just charge after this dude. I don't know why we're giving the play-by-play, as though anybody listening to this podcast doesn't know what happened yesterday. So Nolan charges the mound. Luis Perdomo throws his glove at Nolan and then runs away.
Very Paxton Lynchian release
very
point.
Very Tebowian release. And then it turns into a whole Donnybrook, a whole brouhaha, shenanigans, fisticuffs. It was all kinds of chaos. There's going to be a lot of suspensions. Five ejections yesterday. Nolan Arenado, Gerardo Parra, who came sprinting out of the dugout and was like jumping on top of teammates to try to get at members of the Padres, which was quite entertaining.
Which I appreciate I guess. What I don't appreciate,
that's the other one.
Who had cruised through three innings, coming out of the dugout and getting his own self ejected.
Yeah.
Like,
not
come
smart.
On, come on, man.
Not smart.
Come on.
And, you know, it's something when you're a kid, which German Marquez is still 23 years old, you'll learn, but not smart. Especially when you're – it's one thing if, like, he wouldn't have been – it's not smart at all. And let's just state for the record, none of us are in favor of baseball fights. None of us are in favor of sports fights. Really, for the most part, hockey is a different thing because you're constantly colliding with each other and guys are going to get frustrated, and men as creatures are stupid idiots anyway who are just going to take this to, well, why don't we just fight about it? Baseball fight. The only acceptable baseball fight.
How woke of you, jeez.
The only acceptable baseball fight is after a dirty slide. That's the only acceptable baseball fight. Beanball wars.
Yeah, which we kind of saw last night.
Beanball wars are the dumbest
Yankees,
thing on
Red
the planet.
Sox.
Yeah, Yankees-Red Sox last night.
Correct.
Boiled over as well. But baseball, beanball wars are the stupidest thing ever. And the thing that's dumbest about them is, like, you could kill somebody with a baseball. You're throwing 90 some miles an hour. It's happened. Yeah, like people have been killed by baseballs colliding with their temples. And yes, dudes wear helmets these days, etc. That does not make you immune. So beanball wars are really dumb. And so do we defend Nolan charging the mound? No. Was it kind of entertaining to watch? Yeah. Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna talk about it in its full scope here in a minute. But first we're gonna hear from some of the key participants in the scuffle yesterday, including one Nolan Arenado, Rockies manager Bud Black, and Rockies outfielder Carlos Gonzalez, who has been, you know, kind of Nolan's protector, Nolan's older brother, Nolan's mentor with the Rockies over his career.
His older brother.
He's like good looking, like the older brother on the sitcom who's better looking than the main character kid. But for whatever reason, just like doesn't really come around as much.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
So we're gonna hear from those guys, and then we'll break things down. So let's hear a little bit from Nolan and Bud. Let's hear from the manager first. Bud Black, the Rocky skipper, yesterday in his post game comments, was asked a handful of questions about the brawl. And first, just what his level of surprise was at the moment happening in the first place.
You know, hey, listen, Nolan reacted. I mean, there was a ball thrown behind his head, and he reacted. You know, I'm sure the team felt that, you know, that was intentional, and he wasn't going to have it.
The fact that the fight happened is one thing. The fact that it happened with the Rockies' best player is another. And Bud Black was asked what his feelings were about Nolan Arenado being the one to get the mix started.
It's part of the game. It could be anybody. You know, Nolan's part of our 25-man roster. He's as competitive as anybody. He's as engaged with each teammate as everybody else. So, you know, for me, it was Nolan, you know, who got intentionally thrown at. So he reacted.
Obviously not a whole lot you're going to glean sometimes from a manager or a head coach in situations like that. So Rockies players obviously address the situation as well. Carlos Gonzalez, like we talked about a minute ago, has been such a mentor and such a kind of older brother figure to Nolan Arenado throughout his entire career so far. And Cargo was asked what his thoughts were about the incident bubbling up in the first place.
I mean, I think there was a lot of intensity, especially those are the first two games at home. You know, you go out there, try to battle, try to get that win, to get things going. We hit two guys before, not on purpose, but you know, sometimes it's part of the game, you know, they're trying to send a message.
Oh, yeah.
And, that's exactly what we do. He reacted that way. So we got his back.
Everybody's going to react differently in a situation like that. And Cargo was asked what he thought of Nolan's, whose instinct was to charge the mound, and what exactly that meant in terms of his perception of the day.
I mean, the guy was throwing 94, 93. That was the hardest pitch you threw all night, all day. So 96, 97. Close to your head. You don't know how you're going to react. I don't know how I'm going to react. I don't know if I'm going to defend them out or say something, but you know, everybody's different. No one reacted that way. We're all going to go out there and try to protect them.
Nick Groke from The Athletic also asked Cargo if this seems like a situation that's going to carry over. The Rockies and Padres will see each other in another couple of weeks at Coors Field. Could we see some more fireworks from that when this series continues?
No, I think I should, you know, as a professional, you got to put that on, you know, put that behind. Both things got affected. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a couple suspensions coming. So, you know, tomorrow's another day. We're going to show up and try to play baseball. Like I said, we're not here to fight. We're not here to make any problems. And we're trying to put a good,
and then the man himself, Nolan Arenado, was pretty muted yesterday when speaking with reporters in front of his locker, but was given a chance to just talk first about the incident and his initial reaction and kind of give some insight as to that moment from his point of view.
Obviously not very happy. I don't know, there's not much to say. Usually I try not to say too much what happens on the baseball field, so I'll probably stick with that. You know, it is what it is. I didn't like it. I thought they had to do something.
A little bit tough to hear Nolan there at the end of that, but he said basically they thought they had to do something, and I thought I had to do something too, so that's why I went out there. Troy Rank asked Nolan what exactly it was that he took most exception to, whether it was the idea of being thrown at, where the pitch was, all that type of stuff. What was it that stood out most that made Nolan react the way that he did?
You know, probably all the above, you know. Just getting thrown at, 96 inside, you know. All the above is probably just frustrating, but it is what it is. I don't have much to say about it. I really don't want to talk too much about what happened, like I said, on the field, but you know, it is what it is.
Toward the end of the fight, Padres hitting coach Mark McGwire kind of cornered Nolan and was speaking to him. You could see the signal. He was making the hand signal for three, although he was doing it in the very strange curled thumb and forefinger and three extended other fingers, which is weird. Who does the number three like that? Anyway, Nolan was asked what Mark McGwire said to him. The reason that I wanted to play this clip, about 3 seconds into it, you will hear just a very loud laugh. And this was kind of an odd, awkward situation. You're all standing around and talking to Nolan, who's, you know, upset, knows he's going to be suspended, all that type of stuff. Carlos Gonzalez walked into the clubhouse, just decided in all of this silence to just toss out a really awkwardly loud laugh. So I wanted to play it just for that, too.
Yeah, I mean, we were having a little discussion there. And, you know, no big deal. It is, you know, explaining something, and I was trying to explain something. No big deal. I got respect to Mark.
The Rockies, of course, right after the fight, 5 runs. They end up winning that game. Nolan was asked about what he thought of his team's response to the fight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't sit here and say that I motivated them. I don't have to ask the guys that, but cheers after 1. So we got some runs, and that was good.
And finally, Nolan was asked whether or not he expects to be suspended, and yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I expect to be suspended. I don't know how long. Hopefully it's not a long time, but I expect something to probably happen.
So I was there yesterday. I was at the press box eating the burnt tips from the Sandlot Brewery, the smokehouse, which I did not know that they had burnt ends. I always call them burnt tips. I get them confused with rib tips. Burnt ends.
Burnt ends? Is that not?
Burnt ends, but yeah. They're phenomenal. Very good. My only issue with the burnt ends, they serve them with coleslaw. And coleslaw is like, it's fine.
Get out of here. No one needs it.
It's fine,
no one needs
but I would never. Coleslaw I only consume when it's been given to me on a plate. Like, I never.
Yeah.
There's never been a time where they've been like, here's a choice of sides. And I'm like, give me that coleslaw. Eh.
Yeah. Never once have I ever said, you know what would go better with this?
Yeah.
Mayonnaise and cabbage.
Like, that's really going to. You know? That'll cure what ails you. So that was my only complaint about the fight, was that the coleslaw, I would have rather had some fries or some mac and cheese or something. It wasn't really related to the fight, but that's what I'm going to think about when I think of the fight. So I'm sitting there devouring my burnt ends, and, I hear this gasp from the crowd as I look up, and I looked up right as Nolan was kind of discoing his way out of the path of that baseball, flies behind him. Nolan wastes no time, turns, runs toward the mound, spikes his helmet down, which Nolan did in the evaluation of all things dumb baseball fight. Nolan did the approach perfectly. He didn't use the helmet as a weapon. He didn't wait. Yeah,
he didn't take his bat.
He didn't wait and do the whole, like, hold me back with the catcher. Like, he made his decision. He committed. He threw the helmet down, and he went at Luis Perdomo. Luis Perdomo, on the other hand, chucks his glove as a grown man, chucks his glove at
misses
Nolan,
him by 5 feet,
and then turns and runs away. Or as some dude who works for NBC San Diego said yesterday, he didn't run away. He's just an awkward fighter, which is the dumbest.
That is some incredible mental gymnastics.
That was the same level of mental gymnastics as the dude who tweeted yesterday that the Republican who tweeted yesterday that Paul Ryan's resignation was actually good because it confused the Democrats. Like, it's the same level of, like,
yep. It's the same.
I'm not retreating. I'm attacking in a different direction. It's one of those.
You're not Ambrose Burnside, Luis Perdomo. You're just bad at fighting.
So Luis Perdomo, like, and my point was, like, you're all being big, tough, mature, strong men. If you're going to, you're throwing out your toxic masculinity in this way, at least, stand in there and try to finish it. You cannot be somebody who throws an object mid-90s at another human being's back or worse, and then when that human being takes offense to that, you throw your glove at them and run away. You can't do it.
Yeah, baseball fights are almost always like classic, like, wait, hey, Mel, hold me back. Hey, I'll get you this time. Always. And like nothing ever happens. Like this one got pretty interesting. And this is the Rockies never ever get into brawls like this. Like your Veet and Matt Kemp was like 2008. Yeah, that was a long time ago, or 2009, whatever it was, when that happened. Like, it doesn't happen that often. Usually, only happens with the Dodgers. But I'm glad they did it yesterday because usually it'd be a thing that they would do the day after we recorded.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I'm glad
that
we got to talk about it.
Yeah, because last week we drop an episode and then all of a sudden they sign an Chuck hour later. To a massive extension. Yeah, like a very short time later. there are so many things to unpack in this fight. Initially stands out most is the apparent reasoning for this. The Rockies have hit a handful of Padres this year, which, you know, that's going to happen.
Totally intentional.
Dennis Lynn of the Union Tribune. Oh, no, he's with the Athletic now. Everybody's with the Athletic. I'm just going to say, proven otherwise, that everybody's with the Athletic.
Brought to you by the Athletic. Brought to you by.
He said yesterday, and he came out with a list, hit by pitches, Padres, Rockies this year. April 2nd, A.J. Ellis hit by Chad Bettis. April 3rd, Christian Villanueva hit by Scott Oberg. April 4th, Jose Perella hit by John Gray. April 10th, Manny Margot hit by Scott Oberg. Today, Trevor Story hit by Luis Perdomo. And Hunter Renfro hit by Herman Marquez. And then the issue with Nolan Arenado. So the suggestion here seems to be...
That's just gaslighting. Like, that's... I mean, and hey, no pun intended, considering the gaslight. But they were... That's just gaslighting. Like... He's like, oh, I'm presenting the facts, letting all the mouth-breathing Padres fans get all in a lather about it.
Oh, my God, I didn't even see this. His later tweet, quote, A.J. Ellis was blindsided by Gerardo Parra in today's brawl. Quote, as I was trying to be a peacemaker and put that to an end, some of their players took offense to my attempt to create peace. Apparently, I'm not Switzerland.
A.J. Ellis was totally without blame in that whole situation. Totally. If you watch the video, that is ridiculous.
Wow. A.J. Ellis, and I didn't even, like, really notice him in the video until somebody tweeted at us and say, like, it said A.J. Ellis doesn't even try to sell this. And A.J. Ellis, I mean, that pitch is flying in behind Nolan's back, and A.J. Ellis doesn't even move his glove as though he's going to attempt to catch it should it get Nolan, which you really just know then the whole point was to drill that pitch somewhere into Nolan's body. But anyway, so the logic here seems to be the Rockies hit a bunch of our guys very obviously on purpose in all of these games. So now we're going to throw, as Anthony put it yesterday on Twitter, at a perennial National League MVP candidate. Like, that seemed to be the logic.
Twice. They hurt him twice. Yeah. He missed high twice.
I don't, you know, we've obviously spoken our piece about how stupid baseball fights are. Baseball fights are even stupider.
Baseball wars are the dumbest.
Baseball fights
ever.
Are even stupider when they are sparked by nothing. You know, like, have Padres seen Scott Oberg before? Don't they know that maybe not all of those pitches are going the spots they're intended to go? You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's not Clayton Kershaw. Like, he doesn't have pinpoint control.
So that's what apparently brings the genesis of
really,
this.
None of those guys
do. Where it really became apparent in that, and to be fair, Bud Black kind of avoided this, Nolan Arenado kind of avoided this, but you heard Carlos Gonzalez, Mark McGwire approached Nolan after the whole scrum and was holding up three fingers, and as Cargo clarified, he basically said, Mark McGwire told us you hit three of our guys. Of course, we're going to try to send a message. Like, grow up, man.
Yeah. Shut up, Mark McGwire. God, that's some of the dumbest shit,
If you saw that
man.
In a high school game, like, you'd be like, look at these moron, immature children. You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But the thing that comes out of this, the Rockies then go out and they score five runs immediately following the fight in the half inning in which they were already at the plate and the fight occurred. And they get a win. And, you know, the dumb mouth-breathing sports talk radio take is, oh, he's just doing it to fire up his team.
Boys will be boys.
This is what good, strong baseball men do. I don't costume think boys. To do with that. Yes, do I think kind of a heightened release of fight or flight emotion can lead to some things? Sure. But do I think that the Rockies are going on the road to Washington being like, hell yeah, at least we got that fight in. Now we're ready to go.
Can't wait to play without our best player for the next week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going
to
be smart.
You know? It's like, listen, sure. Like, if you wanted to start something, light a fire, whatever, good for you. Now you're going to be stuck without Nolan Arenado and maybe Charlie Blackmon. We don't know how long he's going to be out. He's nursing a couple of injuries. I'm sure it's no big deal. You're not going to be without Nolan Arenado when you're going on a road trip here. That's probably not for the best.
Yeah, not great.
A road trip through Washington and Pittsburgh, who were playing surprisingly well, and the Rockies never, ever play well at PNC Park. So, hey, boy. And, you know, by the way, you get Scherzer and Strasburg
good.
This weekend.
That's good. I'm
just
sure
FYI.
That'll go well. I just, you know, I don't know, man. It's, to me, do you like that the Rockies show a little bit of life in a homestand in which they seem so very lifeless? Yeah. The fact of the matter is they still went 2-4 against the Braves and the Padres. And if you need to go out and fight Luis Perdomo to try to get yourselves going on April 11th, there are some issues with this team.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
If you have to.
So that's my initial reaction. I don't think that it was anything premeditated. I don't think that Nolan did say, you know, I thought there was a chance they could go after somebody. I didn't think it was going to be me, which, you know, yeah, I don't see why they weren't throwing at Eric Hosmer. So why are you coming back and throwing at Nolan? Why are you throwing at Nolan in the first place? Like, it's just the dumbest.
It's so stupid. Like, what's worse, like beanball wars based on hitting batters, which happens in baseball all the time? Like, batters get hit. Like, it's pitchers don't have the best control all the time. That's just how it works. Like, what's worse, that or a beanball war brought on by something in the unwritten rules?
No, the unwritten rules are definitely dumber, I would say.
Like Chance Sisko bunting for a base hit when his team is down 6 and you shift on him. And then he's gonna wear one in the head the next time he sees the Twins.
And Brian Dozier, who 4 days later stole second base in the 8th inning of a game in which his team was up 6. Like, what? Wait. So you're the Supreme Court Justice of the unwritten rules until you just decide that they don't benefit you? Is that okay?
FOH.
So, pretty dumb. So if you came to today's edition of the PDP just waiting for us to be like, hell yeah, and then the fight, now they're all set to go, we're sorry to disappoint. I just think it's, man, really stupid. It's really stupid.
And I mean, really, and the part that sucks now is that they're going to have to go face, you know, the Nats and Pirates or whenever, whoever, when the ruling comes down for the suspension.
How long is Nolan's not going to be around for?
I'm sure he will be appealing at some point, whatever he gets. My guess with these, when you charge the mound, is between 5 and 7 games, and then you can appeal down. I'm thinking he didn't make any contact, so maybe he'll get 5 games. Maybe he'll appeal it down to 3 or 4. And Leo Perdomo will miss a start, which will really hurt the Padres, you know, because they need him.
Yep.
He's great.
Yep, losing that sweet Luis Perdomo time. I don't know. It was entertaining, but it's also just like, come on, you're the Rockies and the Padres. Come on, it's April 11th.
But
come on,
it does reinforce what we've always thought is that Padres fans are dicks.
Yeah, we have
surprisingly
the leaders in the clubhouse on this. On this philosophy regarding Padres fans who are low key.
I've had better experiences in the bleachers at Dodger Stadium or the upper deck at Dodger Stadium than I've had at Petco Park.
Yeah. Petco Park. It is a weird, you would think those people are all like, oh man, the sun and the beach and we don't have an NFL team anymore, but
and
we don't care.
Fish tacos.
Yeah. We're going to drink sake in the ballpark. And they're really just very mean.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's very strange. So,
like the people tweeting at us about, like, you know, when Clayton Richard took John Gray deep, people like tweeting at us, like Padres fans tweeting at us saying, like, with like Matt Holliday never touched the plate, like still in their Twitter bio. It's like, Jesus, that's all you have to hang your head on. Like,
later,
honestly,
you're still, the thing that you're talking about is your franchise's high watermark is losing a National League wild card tiebreaker game.
Yeah. Listen, like, you could write the history of baseball and not include the Padres.
Oh, yeah.
With the exception
without
of
Tony Gwynn. That other than Tony Gwynn, the most notable thing about San Diego Padres history, other than Tony Gwynn, is that Ted Williams played there when they were a PCL team. Like, even before they were a major league team. Back when they were in the Pacific Coast League, Ted Williams played in San Diego for 1 year.
Yeah, but before you say, like, oh, well, what about, like, the Rockies haven't done anything either. Okay, fine. But they've only been around for 25 years.
2 years, by the way, Ted Williams. 17 and 18 years old. He played 2 years with the San Diego Padres. 180 games over the course of his 2 years with the...
If you can write the history of baseball without your team that's been around for how damn long have they been around?
Yeah.
Like... Maybe you shouldn't keep talking shit. I don't know. That's just
so
me.
The thing that really, you know, is the overriding theme is the fact the Rockies lost that series. That's what frustrates you. And now you go on the road to take on a very difficult Washington Nationals team, and you know they're going to be difficult because it's not the playoffs. And
it's a regular season, so they'll be hard, they'll be playing well.
And then the Pittsburgh Pirates, who played great to start the year, so you squandered an opportunity in back-to-back series in six games against two pretty bad teams to come home. You went 4-3 on the road trip, which last week we said, hey, it's going to be great if you go 4-3 on the road trip. And I shouldn't short the Atlanta Braves. The Braves are they're starting off well. I don't think that team is going to hang around very long. The Braves are 7-5.
There's talent there, though.
There's a lot of
talent
on the way, just like there is in San Diego, but Atlanta's got more talent at the major league level right now. But those are two mediocre, middle-of-the-road, two bad teams you just dropped 4-6 to. That's what comes out of this
home season. That you have aspirations to be a playoff team this year. Like, you were a playoff team last year. You should be beating those teams.
And you went 4-3 on the road. You took 3-4 in San Diego, and then you come home and you lose 2-3 to the Padres? Like, that can't happen. It can't happen.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But the thing, I guess, that you'll try to take away from it if you're seeing the evaluation of, oh, man, it's baseball fight, it sparked the team, blah, blah, blah. I think it does show you early on in a season, if I'm going to put on a sports psychologist hat, you do have moments in – circumstances like that where you realize, like, all right, we do all have each other's backs, and those are valuable for teams. I think you can certainly learn them in other ways that aren't like, oh, look at me, I'm a big tough jock. But, you know, to be fair, Nolan also didn't start that yesterday either, so we're not gonna put it all on Nolan for charging the mound. If I had a human being throwing 95 mile an hour projectiles at my skull, which, you know, the pitch that Nolan got out of the way from was behind his back. It wasn't at his head. But but still, like, I don't know how I would react. I'm certainly not going to judge how Nolan reacted. Just, you know, you would have liked to have seen that on the way to a three-game sweep rather than, well, we lost 2-3 to the Padres, and here was the turning point in the series, and it came in the third inning of the last game.
Right. And it's like, it's, you know, oh, it's going to spur you on to other things. It's like, well, yeah, maybe that day and they're all jacked up and adrenaline's running, but then they got to sleep, you know, wake up the next day and you go, oh, okay. Yeah. You have a cross country flight, you know. And I don't get that part of it. I understand why it's good for camaraderie. And I really understand that, but it's, I don't know. It seems really unnecessary. And it's too to deal with Nolan without Nolan now for a while.
The biggest issue, and it is not a good time. I mean, it would have been one thing if the Rockies had ended up losing Nolan and they're going into a stretch of games against, you know, the Reds or the Marlins. But to lose Nolan now with this couple of series coming up with Washington and Pittsburgh, not great. I don't know, though. Your thoughts about this homestand. They go out. This offense looks atrocious. They no longer have a healthy Charlie Blackmon immediately after signing him to a 9-figure extension for 6 years. Well, I guess we didn't even talk about that. So
no, we didn't.
Let's cover that because
I want to say one last thing on the whole brawl thing. I'm trying to remember. I think it was 2015. Early on in that season, the Royals had just been to the World Series. They lost in seven games. But early that year, like in Yordano Ventura, may he rest in peace, started like 8 brawls in the first like 2 months of that season.
Yeah, he's just throwing
it. Do you remember that? Like he fought with Adam Eaton. He fought with the Twins. Like he fought with everybody. And the Royals got that reputation that they were just not going to be – there's going to be like the dicks of the league. They're going to throw at everybody. They're going to fight with everybody. They got a chip on their shoulder and whatever. And you talk to players since then, and they say that early on in that season they got that reputation and it brought them together. I'm not saying that the Rockies should become that team that likes to fight all the time, because it was very, very vomit-inducing from the Royals every day. It was like, oh, yeah, chip on your shoulder. I get it. Whatever. But – you know, something like that can be a galvanizing force if you let it be that way. So we'll see how they respond this weekend in Washington, and then we can move on from there. Hopefully this is just dumb. We can get this behind us and move on.
But, you know, they got to start playing better ball, too, and that's what this comes down to. The Rockies right now are just not a good offensive team. Yesterday, they go out and, you know, put up actual decent offensive performances up and down the lineup, and, you know, they score 6 runs. This is a Rockies team right now that, as a group, has the 4th worst team batting average in the National League. 3rd worst, actually, tied with the Cincinnati Reds. And they, as a team, are reaching at a .306 rate. .232 team average.
Oh, you just know they're going to hit.
.306 on base percentage. .399 slugging percentage. The Colorado Rockies, who, because of the ballpark alone, start every game up 5-0, as we're constantly told by the national media, are the 3rd worst hitting team in the National League. The worst teams than the Rockies and the Reds right now are the Philadelphia Phillies, who are batting .221 as a team, and the .218 hitting Miami Marlins.
Well, the biggest problem right here, we've been talking about it a lot this year, and you know, it's something that we saw last year that the Rockies had issues with, but it's hitting the ball on the ground too much. The Rockies right now have hit the ball on the ground 49.7% of the time. That is the 2nd highest mark in all of baseball. Only the Miami Marlins have a higher mark than the Colorado Rockies. And this has been a big point of contention on Twitter with our pals Hayden Ringer, our pals Ryan Freemeyer. They've been really stressing this fact that the Rockies, of course, in terms of all teams in baseball, should be ascribing to the launch angle theory more than any other team in baseball because of the park they play in. If we're told that fly balls fly farther, fine. Hit the ball in the air more and give yourself a chance to score more runs. The Rockies last year had 2 really great players offensively in Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackmon. DJ LeMahieu was very fine, had a nice year. Everybody else was pretty average. And we went into this season with the same staff, pretty much same roster, with the exception of Mark Reynolds. And this team should not be hitting the ball on the ground ever, 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 ever. The 5 teams that are the 4 teams that are the lowest ground ball rate, the Astros, the Cubs, the Mets, and the Angels. Those are pretty good teams right now. They hit the ball in the air. They hit home runs. That's what they do. The Rockies right now are not hitting the ball in the air, and it is killing them offensively. They are the one team with the distinct advantage they have playing in their home park that should be ascribing to hitting the ball in the air more than any other team. And right now they're doing it with the 2nd fewest consistency of any team in baseball. And that has to change if the Rockies are going to do anything offensively this season.
The entire trend in baseball over the last several years is everybody changing launch angles, trying to get lift in their swing, hit the ball in the air. And the Rockies have gone the total opposite way than that. How is that possible? Like,
they were 7th last year in the ground ball frequency, 46.7% of the time.
How is that possible? And to be fair, that was all Ian Desmond.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, this year, Ian Desmond still kind of doing that. 68.8% ground ball rate after 63.5% last
year
for Ian Desmond.
Really? Outside?
He's not learning. Like, it's like any – this is the damnedest about Ian Desmond this year, and he's become a very easy whipping boy for Rockies Twitter, and I do feel bad for him. He is making it very, very easy for us to be mad at him, because he's still hitting the ball on the ground with ridiculous consistency this year, about 70% of the time. And at the same time, he's not pulling the baseball at all. He has 3 home runs, all to right field, by the way, which is you're like, okay, that's good, I guess. But he's not pulling anything to left field. It's like, you want to use the whole field, and that's great, but you got to use your pull side eventually. He has 9 hits this year. 0 have been to left field.
It's so strange, because you look at Ian Desmond.
It's weird.
2017, like, and it's like, yeah, that's a guy who could – he could profile fine for Colorado, and he is just
– it's weird. How do you not pull
He's the opposite of Nolan. Remember a couple years ago, Nolan had never gone opposite field for a home run, and then Jonah Carey wrote that story, and like 2 weeks later, Nolan hit his first opposite field home run. Like, Nolan was in the process of completing himself as a hitter. Ian Desmond's just like going the totally opposite route. Like, Ian Desmond in his
last
season.
Someone told him to try. Like, hey, hit the ball to the right field. Like, okay, cool.
Really bad season in Washington in his contract year, in which he had 233, 290, 384. But then he went to Texas, and in 156 games the next year, he batted 285, 335, 446. Not like jaw-dropping numbers, but he had 22 homers that year. He just, you know, he looked like a guy that you thought, I mean, he was a 2020 guy. He swiped 21 bases that year for the fourth time in his career. He was a 2020 guy. So it's somebody who you thought, okay, well, the money is weird. The length of the contract is a little weird. But, yeah, I can see, you know, some versatility. He's got a little bit of pop. He seems like he could probably play well there. But, like, Ian Desmond, not getting any better. He's 32 years old. He is now signed through 2021. So you're stuck with him for a while, plus a 22 team option. And he's making $70 million, so you're going to find a way to get him in the lineup. And he's played adequate defense. Like, he's been fine in the outfield.
Sure.
You know, and he's been decent at first base, whatever. But I just, man, like, how long do you justify? Outside right now of Chuck, Chris Iannetta, Nolan, and DJ to an extent, because DJ somehow is. Yeah, Chris Iannetta has been fantastic. Yeah. Chris Iannetta is batting a team-leading .333 with a .421 on-base percentage and a .485 slugging percentage. Chuck, .282, .391, .641. He's OPSing .1032. Nolan, .311, .396, .489. DJ, .308, .390, .481. But aside from those guys,
then it starts to fall off.
Cliff. Cargo is hitting .250. And he's OPSing .760. Like, okay, fine. I think if you got that from Cargo over the course of the year, you'd probably like the OPS to be a little bit higher. You want him to reach a little bit more. But, like, you know, okay.
Trevor Story had a really nice homestand.
Yeah, Trevor Story is up to a .213 average now. He had hits in 5 straight games to start the homestand. He was 0-for-2 yesterday, but he did walk once. You know, Trevor Story, I think, is coming along better than he was at this time last year. But, like,
he's got the launch angle, and that's great. Like, he knows what he's doing there. He is a very all or nothing.
Everybody else is like, he took everybody else's launch angle, and he's just using all of them. He asked to borrow all of the launch angles.
Trevor Story this year, he's hitting the ball on the ground 22% of the time.
Yeah.
He's literally anti-Ian Desmond. Yeah.
But beyond him, like, Gerardo Parra hitting .211 with a .602 OPS. Tony Wolter's only played in 4 games, but he's 3-for-14. Mike Tauchman is 0-for-14. Ryan McMahon
is
1-for-16 because Ryan McMahon is not getting regular playing time, and that's something we'll talk about a little bit as well. Pat Valaika is 2-for-24, which would be fine if Pat Valaika wasn't starting every other day. Like, Pat Valaika, if you look at a guy who's 2-for-24 and he's coming in a reserve role, you think, all right, he's not getting regular time. That's something to be noted. Pat Valaika's made 5 starts at first base. Like, that to me is the most perplexing thing about this team. Coming out of spring training, they name Ryan McMahon to the opening day roster, and you think, okay, Ryan McMahon and Ian Desmond, there's your first base platoon. Pat Valaika has started almost half of the games this year for this team at first base. Like, when was that even part of the conversation?
I think we realized too early that there's not a lot of good right-handed hitting thump in that lineup or on that bench at all. It's a lot of lefties.
It's not getting any better.
Like, it's weird that they miss Mark Reynolds, but they really miss Mark Reynolds. I mean, Mark Reynolds, it's weird to say, because he was one of those guys last year that kept that team afloat in the first half. When they go through a struggle, Mark Reynolds was awesome in the first half. He tailed off in the second, but he also hit 30 home runs and drove in 97 last year. You know, he was a guy they would be able to plug in whenever they needed to at first base. Played a nice defense as well. Like, he had 8 home runs in April last year.
Yeah.
You know, and they miss him, which is weird to say that they miss Mark Reynolds, but I really do think that they do, because, I don't think we ever thought that Pat Valaika would have made 5 starts in the first 13 games of the season. To be fair, I get it. They face 7 lefties. I stand that, but I know Ryan McMahon doesn't profile well against left-handed pitching, but you're not going to get him any kind of reps at all.
That's it.
Really? And especially any kind of consistent reps. And you're saying, oh, Ryan McMahon's struggling. Yeah, because he's pinch hitting like 3 times a week and maybe starting once or twice. Like, that's it. You cannot bring him up to the big leagues and just let him sit on his hands if you want to see what you
and
have in Ryan McMahon.
He gave a quote to Nick Roque, The Athletic, yesterday and said, I had no idea how difficult this was going to be. Like, I didn't realize this was the role that I was coming up here for. And if you're the Rockies, what is the purpose of this? Yeah. What is the purpose of having one of your – Ryan McMahon entered the season as, I think – and now I'm going to tap dance until I can get the site to open up and look. I'm going to say – yeah, number two, the number two prospect in the Rockies organization, according to MLB.com. Why – what is the purpose of having him at the major league level right now? If you're not going to get him into the lineup regularly, what's the point? You're just wasting him. If anything, you are contributing to a regression in Ryan McMahon's development by not getting him. What good is it doing him to sit every day? The other issue is the Rockies right now, they don't have a whole lot else going for them in terms of prospects that are going to be able to contribute from the right-hand side. Brendan Rodgers is a right-handed hitter, but Brendan Rodgers is two levels away. Hasn't started off that great for Hartford. He's batting 172 through seven games, the 614 OPS. Raimel Tapia is a left-handed hitter. Jordan Patterson is a left-handed hitter. If you remember Jordan Patterson, if he was still alive. It's like the best right-handed prospects that the Rockies have in the system outside of Brendan Rodgers is like Colton Welker and Tyler Nevin, and they're at Lancaster. So, like, Dante Bichette is not walking through that door.
Definitely. No, he is not. No, he
is not. So I don't know. I just
not.
Don't understand the Ryan McMahon thought process right now. What I will be very interested to see is, does Ryan McMahon get the starts at third base with Nolan suspended? Or do they continue to go to Pat Vallejo?
I'd be shocked if he did. I mean, and hey, that might take away Vallejo from first base and let Ryan McMahon start at first base. I think your plan right now is to have Ryan McMahon be your first baseman, or be a first baseman, not necessarily the first baseman starting all the time, clearly. But I think you'll have Vallejo third, and then hopefully, for the love of God, Ryan McMahon. Like, they face a lefty tonight again in Gio Gonzalez, but they also face Roark, Scherzer, and Strasburg in succession. So,
great stuff. Not great, Bob. I'm just so perplexed by the whole thing. And
it's bizarre.
Yeah, I don't really know. I don't know. I don't really know the way to best tackle it, because I'm not somebody who, you know, gets paid to do that for a living. But I just don't get. And Ryan McMahon, like, is he great against left-handed pitching? No. But is it worth never getting the guy time just to sit him against lefties? Like, to be fair, Ryan McMahon last year in AAA. Against left-handed pitching, and he was crushing everybody. But against left-handed pitching, Ryan McMahon hit .304, .349, .429 against lefties. And it wasn't a super small sample size. It was 56 at-bats.
Sounds good.
He sucked against lefties in AA, but like, it's not like it's impossible for Ryan McMahon to hit left-handed pitching. I just don't – I don't know. Does Ryan McMahon against lefties present you a worse – ultimate outcome than Ryan McMahon never in the lineup? I guess that's what it comes down to.
Right.
And like, this bench, how long can this bench continue to go along with? I mean, I like Mike Tauchman. I love Pat Vallejo. I think Pat Vallejo is the exact type of extra guy that you need on this roster, because he can play four infield spots. You could probably put him in the outfield if he needed to, but he's starting now. You know, like, Tony Wolters as a backup catcher, okay, sure, fine, whatever. Like, how long, though, are you going to rely on these guys who have combined for – what has the bench combined for, like, two hits so far?
It's not great.
Ah! I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
It's
– I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how it goes. I don't know. I don't know. It's a little maddening. It's a little maddening.
I know it's early. I get it. Yada, yada, yada. It's tough to take at this point.
That's what it comes down to.
Because we saw there were issues already coming into the season, or potential issues, and all of our fears have played out in that way early on. And I think we're all losing our damn minds.
Well, and Rockies Senior Director of Communications Warren Miller came up to me in the press box yesterday and goes, hey, Vallejo didn't start today, so at least you guys can cool off a little bit about that. Right? He goes, you know, I know it was firing you up. Yeah, because there's a reason why. This should not be this bad of an offense. And the people who are screaming from the rooftops all offseason and coming into this year, the offense is not as good as you think it is. Those people have been proven right so far. And yes, it's 13 games. But unless everybody catches fire, unless we see second half cargo come to play for the rest of the year.
I just want to see some kind of sign that it's going to be okay. Rockies pinch hitters this year are 1-for-24 with 12 strikeouts.
Oh boy. And that's a role that Pat Valenka was very good in last year.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a role you hope that Mike Tauchman can fill in. You know, you hope that he can be okay. Like, Tony Wolters hasn't really done much.
And you don't need him to. He's a backup catcher.
Nice games. You don't need him to. But 1-for-24 with 12 strikeouts from your pinch hitters? That's not going to get it done.
Not great.
John Van walking through that door. Art Sweeney walking through that door. We'll see Mark Sweeney tonight, though. I'm very excited. I love Sweeney. He's doing
a hilarious moment on the Padres broadcast on Fox Sports San Diego 2 days ago.
That's the best thing about the Padres. Their TV team.
If you haven't ever had a chance to watch Donald Cello, Mark Grant, they are the best broadcast team in baseball, for my money. I think they're better than SNY. I think they're worlds better than the Dodgers crew now. Only crew hang with them is, and I know everybody's going to hate me for saying this, but Kruko and Kuiper, when they're not doing games against the Rockies and you're not emotionally invested in it, they're very good. The thing, and this is a conversation that we had on Twitter the other day. My issue with FSRM Root ATTSN is I've never watched a broadcast on that network and left it thinking, yeah, I'm a smarter baseball fan because of that. And to be fair, that's in their wheelhouse. I don't think they're asked to add anything in terms of educating fans or advanced statistics or real insight that way. I think it's just a broadcast.
And when Spilly tries, they make fun of him.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just marketed in a totally different way, whether that's the ownership or whether that's the network or whatever it is. That's just never been the game for FSRM Root ATTSN. But when you watch these other broadcasts, like when you listen to Mark Grant, just very easily and relatably, Anthony and I were texting about this the other day. Bob Brenly is this way too in Arizona. And Bob Brenly, for a while, when I first started watching opposing team broadcasts, I wasn't that into Bob Brenly. I love Bob Brenly now because, like you and I were talking, Bob Brenly is like the family friend that always talked to you like you were his equal when everybody else was like, get out of here, kid. You're annoying.
I think I definitely said Brenly is definitely the guy who gave you your first beer at age 14.
Absolutely he is. Like, Bob Brenly, he's just like very real. He's very relatable. And what he does, and Mark Grant does this the same way, he brings a level of knowledge to a broadcast that does not make you feel like he's talking down to you. And that's a difficult thing to do. And it's a difficult balance to strike. And the other thing that he doesn't do, he doesn't play the, well, this game was better in my day card. And that plagues way too many broadcast booths. And not just a fall thing, it's a basketball thing. If you think that's just way too many broadcast booths all across sports. Nobody gives a shit that when you played 30 years ago, you thought things were better. The most comical of those sports for that to be the discussion in, well, I don't even know if you could say that. Because the people who say, oh, LeBron's no better than Jordan because Jordan faced better defenses. A, there's like no way to actually quantify that. And B, LeBron James is the most freakish athlete that any human being has ever seen on planet Earth.
Right. Maybe in history.
And
maybe in history.
When you look at baseball players today, George Frazier was the worst about it because George Frazier was always, back when I played for the Yankees, nobody cares. Nobody cares. And not only that, your Yankees teams, could you imagine those teams going to the plate against Max Scherzer? Going to the plate against Justin Verlander? Could you imagine? That's like nowadays, when you are a major league lineup, you face somebody that has Nolan Ryan like stuff on a regular basis. They might not be as good as Nolan
Ryan. That's the thing. Like, that was like, we face Nolan Ryan. It's like, but now every team has eight Nolan Ryans on them.
Yeah.
You know?
So that is the dumbest thing in the world to me. And Frazier was the worst about it because Frazier made it sound like don't worry about, you don't need to understand anything. I understand everything. Just come to me. But yeah. When you do, I'll lecture you about how dumb you are for not understanding this sport. And, oh, by the way, the sport that you like right now or are attempting to like and that you wish you could get a little bit more into, it sucks compared to when I played. Like, that, but that's least, yeah. Terrible.
At least they have, like, you know, 31-time Rocky yeah. Mountain broadcaster.
Just, like, my issue with whatever the hell they call that network now. But when you watch a Padres broadcaster, you watch a D-backs broadcaster, you watch a Giants broadcast, or even to an extent the Dodgers or a Hershiser every once in a while is kind of this way, you leave it thinking, oh, okay, yeah, I feel like I better understand the intricacies of this sport because of that. Whether it's Mark Grant telling you about the way he threw certain pitches or what he did with his feet on pickoff moves, or, you know, Kruko and Kuiper get into these discussions that are just like, it's like sitting around listening to two physicists. It's like stuff that's so far and above what you generally think about during a broadcast. And you think like, God damn, that is really insightful. You know, like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got on this topic, but the Padres broadcast is phenomenal. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen to it, Mark Grant and Don Orsillo are great. And because they played a clip the other day of Steve Finley hitting a grand slam to win a game, I think against the Diamondbacks back at Jack Murphy Stadium, back when it was still called Jack Murphy, I believe. And Mark Sweeney comes running out of the dugout with his hair on his head that, like, God, it was terrible. Yeah. And they could not stop laughing. Yeah. Like, Don Orsillo could not put a sentence together because he was laughing so hard at how Mark Grant was making fun of Mark Sweeney.
Sweeney with hair.
It was amazing.
Yeah. I think we've used that same clip on Whip Around before to make fun of Sween. And he's a good sport about it. Yeah.
And it's not even like a bad head of hair. It's just like a very 90s head of hair.
Right. And also, and now he's bald.
He's a cue ball nowadays. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, if you get a chance to tune into those broadcasts, they're very enjoyable. There's something else that we were, like, transitioning to talk about that now I can't remember. We did get one very good ass PDP in yesterday from at Jordan Ambron yesterday, who said, quote, after in stars, puts on tinfoil hat, what if Breidich is creating a team that can pitch but can't hit to squash the Coors Field narrative?
Whoa.
I had never thought about that.
Gonna blow the Coors narrative and for all by putting together a team that can pitch and is garbage at hitting.
And it seems like it could work. It's possible.
I don't know. I don't think we'll ever lose the Coors meme.
Yeah,
but
that's the thing. The Rockies could trot out 6 Cy Young Award winners in a row, and it would still just be the laziest, most generic Coors meme forever. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, we're never getting past it. Sorry, folks.
No, never. Never in the world.
All right, what else are we going to talk about? what else is on this episode of this show? What is this? What do we call this?
I don't know.
What are we talking about? What are we doing?
The DPD.
Denver Police Department podcast.
Denver Police Department. No, I think, you know, that little feeling in the back of your head coming into the season was like, man, I really hope this isn't 2008.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, you know, like, because 2007, they made the World Series, of course, and you had all this expectation coming into 2008, and they started 5-8. They went 11-17 in April, and they never really recovered after that.
Yeah.
Won 74 games that year. Now they bounced back in 2009, obviously made the playoffs. But
when you have these limited windows, you can't afford to screw up a year.
Right. You're just hoping it's not 2008. I'm hoping to get that out in the open now so we can just jinx it and be fine. But that's all we're hoping.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of where we stand at this point. I mean, I think they're gonna be fine. That's as close as I can get to giving you encouragement. But you know, it's 2 weeks in, and we got to talk about something. So.
Well, they're going to play the Padres again at Coors Field, April 23rd
and
25th.
Yeah, and then they don't see the Padres again until August.
At Coors Field?
So weird.
They see them again May 14th two games May 14th, 15th
but
in San Diego.
Two home series in the unbalanced schedule era in April against a division opponent, then not see them again for 3 months. So weird.
Yeah.
So weird. 4 months. Very strange.
Yes.
Yeah, so the Rockies will go on the road to Washington for four, and I'm sure that'll go well. And then in Pittsburgh, I don't know, this road trip coming off of a 2-4 homestand against the Braves and the Padres, like, you have to be hoping for a split in Washington and a series win in Pittsburgh, and I don't see that happening.
Yeah, you got to hope the Pirates get cooled off, because they are playing pretty decent baseball right now. Clint Hurdle's got his guys 8-3, you know, scoring some runs. Gregory Polanco playing well. Corey Dickerson hitting the ball.
Yeah.
Our old friend C. Dick batting .342 like it was Christmas morning all over again.
And it doesn't get any easier. They come home to take on the Cubs, then the Padres, then they're on the road to Miami, and then they get the Cubs again in Chicago. So at least they'll have the Cubs out of the way by the first week in May, thank God.
Thank God. And get rid of the Cubs series in Denver as
early as
possible.
Yeah, I wish they played the Cubs and the Mets early on. Like, I don't want to hear from those people ever again. They don't get the Mets.
The seven line army or whatever.
They don't get the Mets here until my birthday week, June 18th to the 21st. Ooh, my birthday is a day game.
Ooh.
I don't know what I'm doing on my birthday this year. You got to open the road trip. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting. I feel like I've been so...
Let's hope this whole thing can just...
The whole fight is going to get him going. I don't know.
Because when they're standing up there against Max Scherzer in the seventh inning on Sunday, they're going to be like, man, I'm sure glad Nolan Arenado got into that fight 3 days ago.
Yeah. It's totally it's the way the minds of professional athletes work, obviously. Man. Yeah. I don't know, fella. All right, I guess that's all. I don't know. I feel so disjointed today. I was up. There were two San Francisco Giants prospects who hit for the cycle in the same game last night, and I was like chasing down interviews and writing that story and up all night, all off. You know how it goes.
I do.
So I apologize for a standard poor podcast. Like, it's not below average, because the average is so low.
Yeah. We're not shooting for a high bar here.
Yeah, it's not like we have a bar to clear that's real hard.
Also, I went to the Dodgers game last night, and they had a very nice, like, sweater giveaway, like a sweatshirt giveaway, like a pullover, like really nice, like the three stripes along the bottom. Like, it was really nice, and they're very fine. But I want to burn it ritualistically, and I want it to be gone out of my life forever, in perpetuity.
Yeah. I think
we can make that sacrifice. Also, the Dodgers got throttled last night by the A's. 21 hits.
Yeah. And
how's
the
Alex
A's...
Wood? That's their number two. Alex Wood getting rocked.
And it was after the A's got dominated by Hyunjin Ryu.
Also, I saw that Trace Thompson catch last night in real time was awesome.
Yeah.
Robin Puig of a 3-run homer.
Yeah. Thompson is a really good player.
That was cool. Like, I feel bad for him, because he's never going to be, like, you know, out of the shadow of his brother. And he's not going to be a great baseball player. He's definitely fine, obviously.
Yeah, he's fine. He's a fine player.
You know, he's got tools. Toolsy.
Toolsy, as they say.
Yeah. But he made one of the best catches I've seen live last night. Robin Puig at that homer. That was sweet.
There are just, like, so many early storylines that I'm very interested to see.
Shohei Ohtani? I haven't mentioned that. Like, my God.
Ohtani has been so much fun. Oh, we still didn't really talk about Chuck. I guess we could wrap things up on that.
That's true.
Charlie Blackmon signs a long-term extension of 6 years. I'll give you my thought, and then I'll let you take it, because I think mine is relatively along the lines of what the average assessment of this is. 6 years for a guy who's already 31 and plays center field at Coors Field? Really?
Don't really see that happen too much.
That's what blows my mind. Like, I don't... Chuck turns 32 on July 1st. And we're obviously in an era of baseball in which you see teams going away from guys who are past the age of 30. 6 years, $108 million. That's what the Rockies gave Chuck. He'll get $21 million per year from 2019 through 2021. And then a pair of player options worth $21 million in 2022 and as much as $18 million with incentives and everything in 2023. But by 2023, Chuck's going to be 37 years old that year. Like, center fielders don't get better after their early 30s. And
right.
I don't really know what the plan is for the Rockies in center field.
Well, you're hoping that his bat will play at a corner position,
yeah,
which it probably will once
fine,
he gets older.
But you also have nobody, and because I am starting to move into the camp of, we now no longer know that David Dahl is going to be a major leaguer. I don't think
he's on the DL now because of an illness that sapped him all the strength, which is, you know, just one more thing for David Dahl
which
to have to deal with, you know,
because we like
he's
David
got
Dahl.
Such an adorable dog now, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, friend of the show. We like David Dahl a lot, yeah. But I think David Dahl has been removed from the, well, he's just got to stay healthy and he's going to be fine. We don't know if David Dahl can stay healthy. We don't
know.
Yeah,
but that's the problem.
David Dahl's
if
had one
healthy,
good
yeah,
major league
great,
stretch. But, he played in 63 games in the big leagues in 2016 and was fantastic. He has played in total 21 games of baseball since the end of 2016.
Yeah.
So we don't know what David Dahl brings anymore. And
is Raymel Tapia going to be somebody we can bring up to the big leagues and be consistent? I'm not sure.
And,
I mean,
can Raymel Tapia handle
center
field at Coors Field? He plays a terrific center field in Albuquerque. I think it's a very good judge. But is he the type of guy that you can rely on day in and day out as a starting center fielder at Coors Field? I don't know. So Charlie Blackmon, you hand him this money, you hand him this extension, and eventually you want him to move to a corner spot, and you think the power and the bat are still going to be there, which is very possible. That's all well and good. You don't have anybody to take over center field right now if those guys don't pan out. And the fact that Mike Tauchman is on the roster and not Raymel Tapia, and the fact that David Dahl is back on the disabled list and has played 21 games of baseball over 2 years, over a year plus, I guess I should say, like, it doesn't really give you a whole lot of confidence that there is something waiting in the wings to make this deal look like, okay, it's smart, I get it. What I don't agree with in the assessment of Charlie's deal is that it hamstrings the Rockies from signing Nolan long-term.
No, I don't believe so.
I don't agree with that at all. And
no, it's front loaded.
Yeah. And that was the dumb take. Like, the money for Charlie Blackmon is evenly spread over the course of the deal, which basically in baseball terms does make it front loaded. It's not the type of contract that we saw with Tulo or Cargo or Todd Helton, where it's this progressively increasing heap
or
of money.
Pools.
Yeah. Or Albert Pujols, where you're seeing just God. Like year after year, these gigantic paychecks continue to grow. And all of a sudden Chuck is 37 years old and he's making $29 million a year when he was making 15 at the start of the contract. That's not how it works with Chuck. So I don't think that it in any way hampers the Rockies from signing Nolan long-term, nor do I think that it signals that the Rockies have not started that conversation. I think if anything, it might signal that the Rockies are in that conversation with Nolan. Obviously they're not going to say it. Nolan hasn't said it, but I don't agree with that assessment of, and that was again, the mouth breathing sports talk radio take was, oh, well, they're just screwing themselves out of signing Arenado long-term. No, they're not. That's not the way it works in baseball.
No, and the thing is, when you have a young team like the Rockies do, you're not going to need to be paying a lot of guys a lot of money anytime in the next few years. Like, all your basically your entire pitching rotation, you're not going to need to pay them a lot of money for a few years. So you can afford to spend to keep your superstars here, keep your superstars happy, keep Charlie Blackmon around so Nolan knows, hey, you know, they didn't let Chuck walk. They clearly want to win here. I might want to sign here, get an extension, stay here. You know, when you can afford to do that, when you have years left with Gray and Freeland and Tyler Anderson and all these guys, Senzatella, all these guys, you have them for years now where you're not going to have to pay them $15, $20 million a year to keep them in Denver. So you can afford to try to get your roster around you, your offense better. You know, the one that hamstrings the Rockies more than the Charlie Blackmon deal is the Ian Desmond trade. That's the one that sucks, the deal. Yeah. That's the one that sucks for the Rockies. But now, I like the fact that they wanted to keep him around because the Rockies, as you know, have always been about loyalty. If you show loyalty to the Rockies, they will repay you. And I appreciate that. The fact that, you know, in this market right now where nobody is paying for any players years after they turn 30, It's like, you know, some like Blade Runner kind of thing. Like you turn 30 and you die, or Logan's Run thing. Like you turn 30 and they kill you, and then you can't play baseball ever again. Yeah. Like they're not doing that. They still think Chuck has some productive years left in him. And I think he does. He's coming off one of the best seasons ever for a leadoff hitter in history last year. You know, he's been with you for a long time. He's a fan favorite. I think you reward the loyalty he has shown you and what he's done for the fans, the community. And I think people flat out like Chuck, and that's great. They want to keep him around. I don't think there's a problem with that. They're not paying him $50 million a year. It's not your money. It's okay.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Like, everybody acts so – it's such a personal affront when teams sign a contract to a player that they don't – that fans don't agree with. You're not paying the money. What do you care? Yes, you want to see your team win. You want to see that your team is committed to all the players that you want to see back. This doesn't hinder the Rockies' ability to sign Nolan Arenado to an extension. And I think the Rockies know right now whether or not they're going to be able to do that. Nolan has either made it known, yeah, I'll come back here and I'll give you – if Nolan hit the free agent market, he would see as big of a contract as anybody in baseball. Maybe not as big as if Mike Trout or Bryce Harper hit the free agent market, but Nolan would get Manny Machado money.
Yes.
So I think the Rockies know right now whether or not Nolan is in or – he feels like he's going to be better served to go elsewhere. And I have never once gotten the impression from Nolan that he feels like the type of guy who will go for the money and go for the free agent pursuit rather than just
he's to go join Bryce Harper in Chicago or
super
whatever.
Team in yeah. Yankee Stadium. So, you know, I think the deal is fine for Chuck. It's the length of it is what worries me. If it had been a 4-year contract, I think that's terrific. But, you know, a couple of player options at the end of that and a price tag that, you know, is going to be – well, I mean, I don't know. By the time Chuck is 37 years old, $21 million to $23 million a year could be like
may
a
not
pittance
be that much fun. Yeah.
The way baseball yeah, exactly. has gone over the last 15 years. But,
or there'll be a strike and, you know, we won't have baseball that year.
Yeah,
so.
Or the entire economic model of baseball will collapse and Chuck won't be able to get that money anyway.
Thanks, Tony fun. Clark.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be good.
Yep.
All right. Well, I guess that's about all.
Yeah.
That's about all we got. My apologies for being as disjointed as I am today, but
everything for everything.
You know,
yeah.
For everything. For everything. Our apologies for everything. Our apologies for just being, you know. I don't know why you continue to come here.
Yeah.
For us, for this.
Go home.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all. All right. He's Anthony Masterson. I'm Tyler Mon. Get in touch with the show. T-shirts. We have T-shirts now. Again.
Oh, my God.
You're
so disjointed.
I am. PurpleDinosaurPodcast.BigCartel.com. We got all kinds of cool stuff. Not only do we have our shirt out for this year, but Humble Monster brought back the Charlie Captain Blackbeard shirt.
Love that. I'm wearing it right now, actually.
Oh, look at you. The purple one.
Yes.
Because now you can pre-order your black shirt with the purple Charlie Blackbeard on it. And you can also get your 2019 campaign t-shirt for the Walker Helton ticket for the Baseball Hall of Fame. That is up right now. PurpleDinosaurPodcast.BigCartel.com. That is the 2019 Purple Dinosaur Podcast t-shirt. So you can get yours. You can pre-order. And... you know, sported around Coors Field. The weirdest thing is going to games and seeing people wearing our shirts and like them having no idea who I am and I have no idea who they are. And it's just like, oh, you purchased something that gave us a small amount of money. That's cool. I enjoy that.
Hey,
very much.
Thanks.
Thanks for part of your paycheck. But yeah, so go get your shirt right now. And if you got anything else you would like to get in touch with the show about, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. I will more than likely never check it, and so we'll see if we ever...
So just hit us on Twitter.
Yeah,
like
hit us up on Twitter, @ Purple Dino Cast on Twitter, and... I guess that's all.